Joe stared at the clock, curled up in one of the uncomfortable chairs near the balcony. He wished he'd gotten to share with Andy, but that was impossible, not now that he had to make good on his promise. Joe wasn't surprised when the door to his room opened. He tore his eyes away from the clock, 4:52, and looked over to where Briar stood in the doorway. He came into the room, letting the door swing closed behind him, unmindful of the noise. Joe pushed away the sinking feeling in his stomach and got to his feet. He was angry suddenly. He'd done this for a purpose, and now here he was, with nothing. He felt stupid, furious with himself for falling for the lies, and with Briar for being so good at spinning them. "I'm not into guys," Joe said nervously, breaking the silence. "I had a girl once," Briar told him. "She was perfect." "What happened to her?" Joe asked, unable to resist, though he knew it was probably best not to humanize the thing standing in front of him. He wasn't a person, didn't have the same feelings at all. Any anecdotes to the contrary couldn't possibly be true. "Your kind aren't known for their decision-making skills," he said, his tone clipped. The sharing portion of the evening was obviously over. "The sun will be up soon," Briar reminded him. It took all Joe had not to flinch when the vampire turned his head, exposing the vein in his neck. He didn't tease or prolong the moment, teeth slicing cleanly through and blood bubbling up. Joe gasped, his hands scrambling for purchase, anything to help keep him on his feet. He grabbed hold of Briar's suit coat, twisting the fabric around his fingers. It hurt, but he could feel something else tickling at the edge of his mind. It was trying to take him somewhere, pull him from the pain and the fear. He almost let it pull him under, but the comforting feelings flickered, and Joe was able to fight his way out. He'd rather it hurt, that he'd be afraid the vampire would take too much. At least it was honest. He didn't have to worry for long. Briar pulled back, hands firmly gripping Joe's shoulders to stop him from rocking back and forth on unsteady legs. He looked a little dazed himself, drugged almost. Joe wondered if it could possibly have been that good.
"Go to sleep,"
Briar said gruffly, turning away once he'd come back to himself. Joe was still blinking owlishly when he heard the door slam shut. It was a long time before he was able to move. Ryan sat heavily down on the padded bench just in front of the elevators. The green fabric was lush, rich, and Ryan stared at the pattern as he traced it with his fingertips. He felt a little like a coward, hiding here. But Spencer had offered to stay in the room with Patrick. Ryan had been beyond grateful. Patrick's stare had been a little too much to take. He'd managed to fall asleep just after sunrise, more out of sheer exhaustion than anything else. He'd slept fitfully until early afternoon, when he'd finally given up the attempt and watched TV with Spencer, while Patrick was mostly muttering to himself, only now and then sharing his opinions on how they were all doomed. It was about an hour to sunset, and Ryan couldn't take it anymore. He wanted to be back home, far away from Pete, pink ties, and unfamiliar threats. Ryan's thoughts were interrupted by the ding of the elevator and the quiet hush of the doors sliding open. His first thought was of Brendan, of the way the bond always let him know Ryan was upset. His second was, for fuck's sake, when he looked up and found Schechter standing over him. Ryan had been worried about Schechter, obviously, but in the course of the day that worry had been shifted to Brendan. Maybe Ryan had been naive to think that was the bigger issue.
"You look terrible," Schechter said. "I'm told that's something of a theme with you. Who knew Brendan would be so bad at this?"
Ryan felt an immediate rise of defensiveness on Brendan's behalf. Only his reluctance to sound like he needed to be cared for kept him silent.
"If I had known that, I never would have gone into debt for him," the dandy continued. "But then, that's the nature of prophecy. You sometimes only get little glimpses of how important someone might be."
Ryan looked up sharply at that, unsure of what he was supposed to say.
"Don't fuck with my head," he said after a moment. "And don't bring Brendan into this just because you want some fun."
"Everything I do has a purpose," Schechter said. "I'm sure you've heard that."
Ryan nodded. It's what scared him most.
"And it's all meant to get me something in the end. They all laugh at my collection of Alexes, but there's a reason that I've kept so many over the years. Like I said, prophecy is a fickle thing, not always so clear. Even for me."
"You expect me to believe that?" Ryan asked. He'd heard so much about Schechter, about his work as puppet master of this little world. The thought that it had all been random was more frightening than it being calculated. No one should have that kind of power when it was focused, let alone when they were striking out blindly, hoping it fit with some fractured vision.
"Don't get me wrong," Schechter said. "I see plenty in minute detail, sometimes decades in advance. But sometimes all I get is a name, like Alex, or a face, like Brendan's."
Ryan knew he was staring, but he couldn't look away. Schechter said it so casually, as though he hadn't just terrified Ryan half to death. Of course, that had probably been his goal.
"I looked for him for years, you know. Turns out I found him by accident on my last day in Beckett City. He would have died in minutes. The punks hadn't been kind. But I fixed that easily enough."
"Why?" Ryan asked, voice barely above a whisper. "Why are you telling me? Why did you save him? Why doesn't Brendan know?" Ryan wasn't sure what she meant. He wondered, though, if Schechter's confession was somehow connected to the memories Brendan had lost to John. Brendan never seemed bothered by it, but maybe it was just that he saw the futility in being upset.
"Why? Because he was going to be important someday," Schechter replied. "He had some role to play in his home city, and he was going to bring me something marvelous." "And he did, Ryan. He brought me you."
"He didn't bring you anything!" Ryan exclaimed, jumping to his feet, suddenly uneasy with having the vampire leaning over him. He couldn't trick Ryan that way. Brendan had been upset at the thought of coming. He hadn't planned on giving Ryan up.
"I won't stay with you," he said. "Are you sure about that, Ryan? Even after you get the box with the tie?"
"It's not his," Ryan insisted. "He doesn't own a pink tie, and we're going home as soon as everyone's ready."
"And I suppose you'll just do his shopping for the rest of your life, then? Steer him away from anything that reminds you of what woke you in the middle of the night, terrified and struggling to breathe?"
How the hell did he know that?
You did this,
Ryan said, pointing a finger at the vampire.
This is your fault.
No, it's Pete's fault. And to a lesser extent, Gerard's and Briar's. You should blame them, because they're the ones who set all this in motion.
Is that why Gabriel let us stay?
Ryan asked.
On the off chance that something would happen?
I may have convinced him, Schechter said.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but it was a wasted effort,
Ryan said bravely, back straight and head held high. His eyes flashed, angry.
We're getting on that plane, we're going home, and we're never coming back here again.
So much bravado. I can see why he likes you.
Ryan was saved from having to answer by the sound of a door slamming shut and footsteps, muted by the fine carpet. Though he knew who it was, could feel it through the bond, he was relieved to see Brendan come around the corner. And then horrified to see what he was wearing.
Nice tie, Schechter remarked, studying the perfectly knotted splash of pink at Brendan's throat.
Brendan looked at him warily, but he didn't get to ask what was going on because Ryan quickly darted forward and was clawing at his neck, trying to get his fingers under the silk to yank it off.
Ryan, stop! Brendan exclaimed. Calm down! You have to change,
Ryan insisted.
Take this off and burn it. Please, Brendan, don't ask questions. What did you do?
Brendan demanded, hands circling Ryan's wrists and pulling them away.
He glared at Schechter, unafraid of what the consequences might be.
Ryan would try to be impressed with that later.
Nothing, Schechter said simply. The better question is, what did you do?
Always riddles, Brendan said, finally fending Ryan off, pinning his arms at his sides.
Ryan, stop. I'm not changing, and we don't have a lot of time. Go get Patrick and Spencer and wait in the lobby, okay?
Ryan nodded numbly, blinking hard to stop the stinging in his eyes.
Are you going to tell me what happened? Spencer was asking Ryan, when Pete came down to the lobby.
Pete had been so focused on the defeated set of Patrick's shoulders and the bags under his eyes that he hadn't even noticed Ryan's fidgeting, nervous gaze. Something was wrong, but Ryan clearly had no intention of talking about it.
Patrick?
Pete asked softly, as he paused near Patrick's chair.
You killed my mother first,
Patrick said, eyes rolling upwards so he could look at Pete. Then my father. Didn't even eat them, just let them bleed out all over the floor. Pete flinched away.
They're still alive, Patrick,
he said after a moment.
None of that is real.
Patrick clawed at the side of his head, all but rocking back and forth.
It will be. I've seen it.
No, Pete insisted.
It doesn't mean that. You haven't been chosen to save the world, Patrick.
Patrick's hands twitched, muscles tensing like he was going to strike out. Only Brendan's order stopped him.
How sweet, Gerard drawled from somewhere to Pete's left. Pete whirled around, barely able to keep himself in check. This was Gerard's city, and Pete had no allies here.
You could always turn him, Gerard suggested. At least that way he wouldn't care so much about killing his parents. Though maybe it's the waste that's getting to him.
I think one unstable vampire is more than enough, don't you?
Pete asked,
eyes sliding to where Frank stood not far away. Gerard was moving in an instant, hands reaching for Pete's throat, when Gabriel's voice rang out.
"Don't make me into a liar," he called. "You know as well as I do that they have a one-way ticket back home."
"Thanks to Briar," Frank said.
He was sitting on the reception counter, swinging his legs back and forth. But the look on his face, terrifying in its anger, was at odds with the innocent set of his body. That, combined with the scars on his hands, gave Pete a sense of unease he could not shake.
"I hope his peace was fucking worth it for all the trouble it's caused," Frank continued.
In Pete's peripheral vision, he could see Joe Blanche pulling on himself. It made him want to hurt something.
"You'll have to forgive Frank. He doesn't let go easily," Gabriel said. "But then, none of us do, so you should make your exit sooner rather than later. Briar was dear to us all." That was the heart of the matter, wasn't it? Pete had once again taken from them, so Patrick would pay the price. The others came down from their rooms, and Pete watched as they gathered their things, ready to leave. He was turning toward the door when he suddenly found himself covered in a shower of glass, the window he stood in front of shattered into so many hundreds of pieces as something heavy flew through it. Whatever it was hit him hard, and he fell under its weight. It wasn't until he was able to focus and felt others lifting it off him that he realized it was a body. A woman, with a length of wood sticking out of her chest. "The next one goes through her heart," a voice called. Pete went still at that, recognizing it, though he had only heard it the once, with Scott, that time he'd crossed paths with the fledgling. He slowly sat up and looked out toward the sidewalk, finding a woman with painted eyebrows and American flag leggings standing there, a murderous look in her eyes. Maybe Pete hadn't covered his tracks as well as he'd thought. "Amanda," Schechter said, moving to the head of the group. His hands were slipped casually into his pockets as he regarded her with a cool expression. "I'd say I missed you, but that would be a lie."
"Still trying to break my heart," Amanda said, pressing a hand to her chest. "Even after all these years."
"Your heart is the last thing I've ever been interested in," Schechter remarked. "What are you doing here, besides attacking one of Gabriel's girls?"
Pete's attention was drawn to the woman who was being pulled back, away from the threat. She was gasping, hands clawing at the stake in her chest, fingers slippery with blood.
Now, Amanda said. "Just because I wouldn't go along with your epic restructuring doesn't mean you have to be so rude."
"Leaving off the fact that your objection to the cities was mostly centered on not getting your own little fiefdom, you've been busy delighting in trying to tear down all we've built,"
Schechter said.
"You can imagine my reaction."
"You mean all you've forced us into," Amanda corrected, leaving off the last remark.
"Not joining your little gang isn't the end of the world," she said.
"Why are you here?"
Gabriel demanded, tiring of the drawn-out exchange. He moved to stand next to Schechter, wearing an identical expression of disdain.
"A bit of payback," Amanda replied. "An eye for an eye."
"In that case, shouldn't I be setting hunters on you?"
Schechter asked, giving Gabriel a stern look for having interrupted.
"Dublin was a very long time ago," Amanda said dismissively, and I still say that was accidental. If this trip down memory lane is through, Gabriel broke in, I want to know why she's here. Preferably before Cassidy bleeds to death. I should really see to that. I want his boy, Amanda said finally, looking back at Pete. His boy for mine. That's fair, I think. There was instant uproar. The humans crying out in dismay, the vampires outraged at how Pete had once again brought trouble to their doorstep. Amanda was laughing, the sound husky and pleased. I'll be back, but for now, think it over. You don't want to cross me in this. Then she was gone, disappeared in the blink of an eye, much the way Pete had seen Beckett do. All Pete could hear was screaming voices raised in angry argument. And above all of that, Patrick's laughter. We should give her both of them, Frank suggested. They're trouble. Look at what they've already done. Gabriel has given his word, Gerard said, as though he'd explained it often already. Maybe he had. Rumor had it that Frank wasn't exactly adjusting well to the structure of his new life. Situations change, Frank insisted. Our own people are being picked off now. Yes, situations change, Gabriel agreed. But not enough. He turned to Pete, fixing him with a strong look of displeasure. You're lucky that her insult is worse than yours, Wentz, or I'd throw that kid at Amanda so fast you wouldn't be able to stop me. So what are you planning to do? Pete asked, thinking that it was probably a bad idea to ask, to let Gabriel have so perfect an opportunity, but unable to just stay silent. I'm going to fuck up her plans, he said simply. He turned to Patrick, took a step toward him, and Pete felt the bottom drop out of his stomach. There was an overwhelming sense of relief when Gabriel just looked, nothing else. Get him upstairs, Gabriel said. She doesn't get what she wants, period. Wentz, go with him. I want you out of my sight. He turned away, gathering his people and outlining a security detail, assigning quadrants to work from. Brendan went with them, and even Briar was welcomed back into the fold, Gabriel seemingly able to overlook his transgressions if it meant keeping more of his people safe. Stay inside, Brendan told Ryan, pulling him off to an isolated corner of the lobby, though there wasn't much privacy to be had. The boy wasn't above trying to convince Brendan to stay, with absolutely no shame. For a moment, Pete thought it was going to work, but Brendan eventually pulled away, hands on Ryan's face to keep him from surging forward again. He repeated his earlier pronouncement. Pete turned away, not wanting to see the look in Ryan's eyes. He'd had such high hopes for that kid. To see him throw it all away for the likes of Brendan was upsetting. He headed for the elevator, making his way up to his room so he could slam the door, hoping for some small measure of satisfaction. It didn't work. All he could do was think of how he should have stayed downstairs, at least offering to help get Patrick up to his room. He didn't emerge until close to sunrise, when he left in search of a blender. He'd used the one in the kitchen just after he'd woken up earlier that evening. But given the change in the atmosphere, the last thing he wanted to do was roam too far when he was still sleepy and hungry, and his self-control was at its thinnest. It would be best to steal it and bring it up to his room. He found Ryan sitting in one of the chairs in the lobby, one hand wedged under his thigh, the other near his mouth, biting his nails to the quick. He kept staring at the boarded-up window, and the vampires standing guard at the hotel's revolving door.
Ryan?
Pete asked, unable to just leave the boy when he looked so lost.
He's not back yet, Ryan said. He should have been back hours ago.
Pete looked at the clock. It was getting close, but there was still time.
He'll make it, Pete said.
Ryan just turned away, looking over as a vampire came through the door, a small white box clutched in his hand, commenting on how he'd found it on the sidewalk. Ryan went momentarily still, before jumping out of his seat, bounding over to the vampire and yanking the box out of his hand.
That's rude, don't you think?
Schechter cut in.
Considering we both already know what's inside.
Ryan's hands were shaking as he flipped off the top, revealing the tie Pete had seen Brendan wearing earlier that evening.
We'll find him, Schechter said.
No! Ryan hissed, throwing the tie down at his feet.
He's going to find him!
Ryan came over to stand in front of Pete, eyes flashing, trying to hold on to his anger to hide his fear.
This is your fault, Pete. You're a mess to clean up. Ryan, maybe it's better this way,
Pete said.
It would be. It would provide Ryan with a chance to get free. No!
Ryan yelled, making a scene and not even caring.
You don't get to make my choice for me. I want him back.
There's time, Schechter said.
She won't kill him right away. She wants something, and she'll lose it if she's not careful. Amanda understands that.
It won't stop her from roughing him up, though, Gabriel said, appearing at Schechter's side.
He seemed entirely too happy at the prospect.
Or maybe just at the image of so much violence.
You're not helping,
Ryan snapped. Gabriel only shrugged.
Where's Patrick?
Pete asked, suddenly realizing that Ryan being downstairs meant Patrick wasn't glued to his side.
With Spencer,
Ryan replied.
I needed to be here.
Speaking of Patrick, we might as well see what we're dealing with, since that's the cause of all this trouble, Gabriel said.
You said you wouldn't see him,
Ryan pointed out.
Yes, well, I'm bored,
Gabriel replied.
And you enjoy the suffering of others,
Pete remarked.
That too.
Gabriel's smile was unsettling. Gabriel led the way upstairs, not feeling the need to keep up any kind of conversation. Pete stood warily behind him in the elevator, and just the thought of it was enough to put a smile on Gabriel's face. The human, Ryan, was quietly freaking out in the corner, not that Gabriel could blame him. He'd seen what happened to humans who lost their vampires. The biggest thing they had to worry about wasn't even other vampires getting rid of them. It was having to deal with any changes that had taken place, without that other person there to help them along. Someone like Ryan, being as far along as he was, would have more than the average difficulty. Although, maybe the reason Ryan was pressed in the corner was because it was the farthest away from Schechter he could get. Gabriel hadn't been thrilled to defer to his sire's order, not only to let the plane land, but to let Wentz and company, and Briar, the traitor, stay the day. Not even the amusement he was getting from Ryan's wide eyes and terror was enough to make him forget Cortez and the way Wentz had slaughtered him. They'd been siblings, and the fact that Schechter could put aside his anger for even a moment even in favor of allowing a scheme 60 years in the making come together, was troubling. Gabriel hadn't seen Briar since his group had returned to the safe house. He was coming out of his human's room, which was across the hall from the tiny room where they'd put Patrick, Ryan, and Spencer. Gabe knew it was hardly the sign of a good host to put disliked guests in the plainest rooms he had, but it was either that or the basement, so they should consider themselves lucky. Briar didn't try to follow them, only stepped back to let them pass, and smirk a little at Wentz. Maybe there was still a bit of the old Briar in there, somewhere. Gabriel hadn't seen any of this manic obsession in a century or more, not since the incident with Ariana. Perhaps Gabriel shouldn't have encouraged Briar to get over her loss, if it meant this kind of foolishness might be repeated. The boy inside the room, Spencer, jumped to his feet when Gabriel entered, putting himself between Patrick and the perceived threat. He was a brave one. Stupid, but brave. "It's okay, Spence," Ryan said, pushing Wentz out of the way so he could get to his friend. "This is why we came here." Ryan was far too optimistic, Gabriel decided. All he'd said was that he wanted a look. He'd never said he planned to fix any of it. "What's he doing?" Gabriel asked, turning away from the two boys. Spencer trying to subtly offer comfort, and Ryan trying hard to hide that he needed it. As fun as it was to watch, the sun would be up soon, and they had to get started. The hand thing? Spencer asked. Gabriel nodded impatiently, eyes glued to the way Patrick's fingers traced imaginary designs on the back of his hand. "He's been doing that most of the night, talking about stars." As if on cue, Patrick went back to mumbling. "See the stars," he said. "Red and blue and purple." "I don't think he's been sleeping since this whole thing started. He's even more out of it than he was," Spencer continued. "Stars?" Pete asked. The look on his face was interesting. Gabriel watched as a tiny seed of suspicion took root. It was almost amazing to watch it happen. He was staring at Patrick's hand, watching the way his fingers traced random designs. No, not random. Always in the same spots. Always in the same shape. "Stars," Gabriel realized. "See the stars." It meant something. Time to find out what. Gabriel sat next to Patrick, not at all surprised when the boy shuffled back without looking away from his hand.
"Stop, Patrick," Ryan said. "He's here to help."
"Help himself, you mean?" Patrick muttered. Gabriel rolled his eyes and focused all his attention on Patrick's mind, reaching out with his power and slipping effortlessly into it. The first thing that struck him was the amateur job that had been done. Even Cassidy, young by their standards, had been better at it her first few attempts. She'd also had an excellent teacher. He had no shame in admitting it. Entire memories had been ripped out, carelessly leaving nothing but gaping holes in their place. The whole point of reordering someone's mind was to make it seamless, so that they had no idea anything had been changed. Causing trauma might be fun, but it hardly made for a lasting experiment. And it certainly didn't bode well if you'd had something in mind for the unfortunate victim. He could hardly be counted on to accomplish anything if he was having a mental breakdown due to the damage left behind. Judging by the lack of care taken with Patrick, either someone had been poorly trained, or there hadn't been any higher purpose to the act. It was a bit of overkill, Gabriel thought, just for a simple revenge scheme. There were plenty of ways to make someone hurt that required less effort. He was approaching the block, wanting to examine it from all directions, when he caught sight of movement to his left. He turned to look, surprised to find a gray and white image of Ryan. Well, that certainly explained Patrick's attachment to the boy, if it could be called that. Curious, but not important. He turned his attention back to the block, eventually deciding there was nothing impressive about it. John might have had trouble breaking it down, but that wasn't surprising. Walker was skilled in the removal and storage of memories, and his gift had little to do with keeping others away from his handiwork. It was just out of his realm of experience. Gabe pushed at the block, attacking it with precision and skill, not relenting when he vaguely registered screaming around him. He wasn't tender-hearted, wasn't distracted by concerns for how some little sweetheart might perceive his actions and the pain he was inflicting, even if it was a case of being cruel to be kind. Gabriel had no such moral compass, so he ignored Patrick's anguished cries, and the aspersions Wentz was casting upon his character, in favor of finishing the job he'd started. It took longer than expected, to Gabe's chagrin. He made a point to keep that information to himself, especially since he'd earlier been so wholly unimpressed with the skill level involved in such work. As soon as he was in, Gabriel could do nothing more than stare. If a human's mind was a well-tended garden, their shoddy little worker had left behind nothing but choking weeds, black and ugly, settling over everything. The implanted images were hastily left behind, flickering slightly, not even having been implanted properly. They'd been cobbled together with Patrick's own experiences as cornerstones, giving them power and easing the way to confusion and believability. Gabriel looked closely at one such memory, easily picking out the real from the imaginary. Patrick's little fantasy about Wentz and a newly turned Andy joining forces had come from bits of three other realities. Being marked by two vampires, Patrick's own anger at Andy for breaking up some frivolous argument, and an old fear, years gone by, of a time Andy had gone missing for a full day and night. Humans were so fixated on the emotional that it would have been easy to build upon the terror, to use it to create such a beautiful little dystopia. The idea was kind of genius, if wasted on Stump. Putting it to rights would be more than difficult, much like forcing pieces of a puzzle into slots where they didn't belong. With such ragged edges, finding the right spots would be both time-consuming and trying for someone inclined to do it. If it all rested on Gabriel, well, there was no hope in hell. The thought gave him pause. This kid might get his life back, but he'd never be the same. They could use that. He pulled out of Patrick's mind and blinked twice, getting used to having a body again, to being tangible and real. "What did you do?" Wentz demanded. Gabriel looked over and saw that Patrick was unconscious, curled up on himself. Gabriel hadn't even noticed that the screaming had stopped. I took down the block in his head. Not that watching Ryan run in circles wasn't fun. Ryan scowled. Do you have a shirt with stars on it? Gabriel asked. Why leave Ryan as the only image? Why that particular one? It wasn't coincidence. He didn't care for the obviousness of the message.
Do I look like a 12-year-old girl?
Ryan asked back.
You've got the ass of one,
Gabriel leered.
Gross!
Ryan exclaimed, looking disgusted at the thought.
Focus!
Wentz's voice cut through Gabriel's laugh.
I will say this, Gabriel began. You've pissed someone off big time, because they did such a shitty job that it makes what John did to, well, him, look elegant.
Spencer bristled when Gabriel pointed at him.
You'd think they'd do better if they wanted to kill us,
Andy said.
Yes, which means there was no reason other than to fuck him up,
Gabriel said, dismissing the theory. He and Schechter hadn't thought it likely in the first place, but it was nice to have confirmation. Trust me, they would have gotten out-of-town talent if that had been the goal. When you care enough, you'll hold out for the best. I'd imagine a lot of people would line up to help, if they knew it was for you.
Wentz growled, and Gabriel didn't even try not to laugh.
He reached out to pat Wentz's cheek before the younger vampire jerked away.
How do we fix him?
Ryan asked.
We don't,
Gabriel replied, taking in the look of anger and despair on Wentz's face.
It was so beautiful, it was almost heartbreaking.
Square pegs and round holes, he continued. There's enough damage left that it'll never be seamless. There will be gaps, and where there isn't, those images will always leave a residue. It's like peeling off a sticker, he explained. There's always some glue left behind. His real memories were used to craft the false ones. I can peel away the world building, but he's always going to remember what happened there. He might even slip back there from time to time. When he sleeps, when he's afraid.
But he'll be Patrick again?
Ryan asked.
Mostly. But with an even stronger hatred for vampires, particularly the ones who ended the world. If Gabriel had enjoyed Wentz's previous look of anguish, this one was so much better because he finally got it. His fantasies of living happily ever after, no matter how vague they might have been in the past, how half-formed, were over. Patrick might return as his friend, maybe even as his lover, but he'd never be a fledgling. Pete would lose him in the end, in the most permanent way possible. Maybe it was punishment enough, an eye for an eye.
Cheer up, Wentz, he said. You're about to become Ryan's best friend.
Why?
Wentz asked warily.
Because your emo is going to bring Brendan home. And not even in an ashtray.
It wasn't hard to find Amanda's safe house. A small apartment that had been leased for years, though never occupied. Gabriel made a point of knowing things like that, he'd said. But Pete thought he'd most likely had someone interview the building manager once an unfamiliar vampire was sighted. Gabriel wasn't as all-knowing as he wanted everyone to think. Not even Schechter could be. Pete quickly cut off that train of thought. Thinking of the seer just made him think of the unnatural interest he'd taken in Brendan's boy. And Pete didn't quite know how he felt about that situation yet. Disappointed, yes. Sad. Betrayed, even. Ryan was never supposed to be part of this fucked-up world. Neither was Spencer, for that matter. The thought that their involvement was willing was mind-boggling. Of course, that made Pete seem like a hypocrite. As much as he'd always wanted Patrick to stay human, if he was being honest with himself, he'd been prepared to turn him if Patrick had ever asked for it. It was a good thing that he'd never allowed himself to really think about that. If Gabriel was right, he'd never get that close to Patrick again. He didn't just forget that kind of terror, or the things that they'd done to him since this fucked up scenario began. And that, apparently, was going to save Brendan.
Amanda, your hospitality leaves something to be desired, Gabriel called, pounding on the heavy wooden door. You've had this place on the books for years, and you haven't once invited me over.
The knob turned easily under Gabriel's hand, and he threw the door open. Amanda was visible through the doorway, standing near the balcony, making a show of positioning a chair in front of the open drapes. Brendan was tied to the sturdy wooden arms, head lolling forward.
There was so much blood in the room that it wouldn't take long for him to go up at sunrise.
You didn't bring the human, Amanda said, disappointedly. I guess you don't really want this one back. She looked at the assembled vampires standing in her empty living room and sighed. Pete heard Gerard and Briar spread out behind him, not wanting to be clustered together in case there was trouble.
He belongs to Schechter, you know, Gabriel said.
Pete and the others looked at him sharply, disbelieving. Pete's shock gradually dimmed, and he realized that it explained things somewhat. Brendan's mysterious sire, Ryan's extraordinary abilities, Schechter's constant meddling. Of course I know that, Amanda said derisively. Schechter was never a great artist, but he used to sketch those eyes. I've seen them often enough. Can't say I wasn't surprised to see he'd finally found the kid, though.
So you know what he'd do if you go through with this, Gabriel said.
I know what he would try, Amanda replied. But I don't have a gang to make me stick out like a sore thumb. No uniform to draw unwanted attention. I blend in wherever I go, and I disappear wherever I want to. I spent years in Beckett City without ever being noticed.
Beckett was oblivious,
Gabriel pointed out. I've been here before, too, Amanda said with a smile. There are more of us than you realize, and that's because we live quietly.
Your point?
Gabriel asked impatiently. My point is that you aren't as powerful as you think you are, and that there are places that even Schechter can't reach. I'm not afraid of him. They were at a standoff. Amanda glaring at Gabe and ignoring the rest of them, knowing they were just for show, because Gabriel would never go anywhere alone. And Gabriel refusing to acknowledge the truth to Amanda's words. Are you going to give me the human? She asked eventually. No, Gabriel said. But I'll give you something better. Once his heart on a platter.
Sounds tasty, Amanda said dryly. Think about it,
Gabriel said, smiling and coming a little closer. You've seen the shape the kid's in. They fucked with his head, which is why Wentz felt the need to kill your darling boy. He took a moment to look over Pete and Tisk. The beautiful thing is how the kid is never going to forget it, even if it's set to rights. So, where does that leave Pete? A hand hovered over the spot where Gabriel's heart would have been, if he had one. Amanda's eyes cut toward Pete, and he hated the amusement in her gaze.
"The poor baby," she said.
Gabriel laughed.
The distance there? It would be gorgeous,
Gabriel continued, voice low, conspiratorial.
It made Pete's stomach churn, and for a moment he thought he was actually going to puke.
Patrick might forgive him, might even still love him, but Pete will still have to lose him. Watch him grow old and frail, watch him die, and then he'll have to put the love of his life in the ground. Every day will be a countdown. It will gnaw at his mind, taint every happy memory.
Pete looked away, focused his attention on the puddle of blood growing across Brendan's feet. It was all he could do to keep from screaming.
Amanda was silent for quite some time, mulling it over.
"I accept," she said finally. "It was the countdown part that really sold it."
"I practiced that," Gabriel confessed. "Now, we'll just take what's left of Brendan home. Ryan is entertaining when he gets upset, but it's wearing thin."
Amanda moved back and gestured to the chair.
"Well?" Gabriel asked, turning his attention to Pete. "You don't think we're going to get bloody, do you?"
"Of course not." Gabriel probably considered picking at Pete's scabs to be his good deed for the day. Pete sighed and walked, straight-backed, to Brendan. No one spoke as he untied the now semi-conscious vampire. Not until he was carrying him toward the door.
"Gerard,"
Amanda called. Gerard stopped and looked over at her.
"It's nice to finally meet you."
Gerard didn't know what to say to that, so he didn't reply at all. By the time they got to the hotel, Brendan sitting on his lap in the car because Gabriel was suddenly concerned with his upholstery, Pete's clothes were ruined. He tried not to let him bother him as he carried Brendan to the room that had been assigned to him. He'd barely gotten him down when Ryan flew into the room, hovering near the bed uncertainly.
"He'll be fine as soon as he gets something to eat," Pete said.
"You stupid fuck," Ryan said, all but jumping onto the bed with Brendan. He pressed his wrist to the vampire's mouth.
"You see what you get for wearing a pink tie?"
Brendan made a tired, muffled sound of amusement, but it was quickly cut off by a gasp and a moan from Ryan. Pete didn't stay to watch. It took several hours to pull apart the fake memories and piece together the parts that actually belonged to Patrick. Pete watched all of it, having borrowed Cassidy's talents since Gabriel had no intention of sharing his own. Though Pete had expected Gabriel's work to be sloppy, a combination of lack of practice and just plain malice, it was the exact opposite. When his reputation was at stake, he was not going to do anything in half measures. Besides, Pete supposed it would make a good story. The great and magnanimous Gabriel Saporta, fixing a lowly human boy. Of course, it was really to inflict more pain in the long run, but that's what would make the story more interesting in the telling. Once Gabriel was done with that, he gathered up the implanted images and locked them behind a block of his own, more sophisticated, stronger than the one he'd torn down. They shouldn't resurface, and all Patrick would have to deal with were his own memories of the ordeal. The thoughts he'd had, the things he'd done, and those that had been done to him in return. That would be bad enough, Pete thought. Once they left Patrick's head, Pete sat there, blinking for a moment. As soon as he came back to himself,
He found Gabriel looking at him with a thoughtful expression.
"You know who did this," he said.
"See the stars," Patrick said. "Red and blue and purple."
"I have my suspicions," he replied. "Why, do you want to send her a gift basket?"
"You found me out," Gabriel said. "You've made yourself a lot of enemies, Wentz. I hope you know what you're doing." Pete wondered if this was the part where he was supposed to fall for the fake concern and get himself deeper indebted. He had no intention of playing that game.
"You should worry more about Gerard. Amanda seemed pretty interested in him," Pete said.
That shut Gabriel up. Pete was impressed.
"As soon as Patrick wakes up, I'll make arrangements to leave," he continued.
"Good," Gabriel said brusquely.
"Make sure you don't ever come back. I might enjoy our current arrangement. You being sad and me finding amusement in that. And Schechter might be under the misguided impression that putting Patrick to rights will keep Ryan within reach. But if I ever see your face again, I will kill you."
Gabriel's voice was so serious that Pete had no trouble believing the threat.
"You've cost me too much already." "I have no doubt about that," he replied.
Gabriel nodded, and then he was gone. Pete sat next to Patrick's bed for a while, watching the rise and fall of his chest as he breathed. He was nervous, unsure of how things would be between them once Patrick woke. He didn't have time to contemplate scenarios, though, because before long, Patrick began making distressed sounds. His hands came up over his head, as if to ward off an attack.
"Patrick, calm down,"
Pete said, moving closer.
"It's just a dream, I promise."
He was struggling with an invisible attacker, unable to break free. Pete grabbed him by the shoulder and shook him until his eyes blinked open.
"Pete?"
Patrick asked. He rubbed at his eyes and struggled to a sitting position.
"I feel strange," he mumbled. "I am so sorry,"
Pete apologized, unsure of what else to say.
"You're the one who scrambled my brain, then?"
Patrick asked.
"No!"
Pete exclaimed, horrified by the very idea.
"Then shut the hell up,"
Patrick told him.
"You didn't do that to me. You have nothing to be sorry for." "But..."
It wasn't that easy. Pete's decisions had had a hand in this, and while he didn't quite understand the motivation yet, he'd get to it in time. They just had to get home first.
"No buts,"
Patrick said. He looked wrecked. Pale skin, dark smudges under his eyes, heavy lids. He should be asleep, letting his body and mind heal, instead of trying to find a way to verbalize whatever was in his head.
"I'm an adult," Patrick finally said. "I make my own decisions. I might follow your plans, but I do it willingly. Whatever incident set this off, Pete, it was my choice. And if we find out it was just because I'm an asshole?"
Pete asked, almost afraid of the answer.
"Being your friend is still my choice,"
Patrick said fiercely, looking for all the world like he'd take on anyone who dared to challenge him. Pete let out a sigh of relief, not realizing just how much tension had been in his shoulders until that very moment. It was like, all of a sudden, he wasn't able to hold himself up anymore. He slumped over tiredly. A tentative hand on his knee brought his head up, and he saw Patrick reaching across the distance between them. It was more than a simple gesture. There was a message in it. And though Pete wanted so much to be strong, he just didn't have it in him. He fell toward the bed, lying on the very edge in case Patrick wanted to pull away. He didn't, though. Made an irritated sound and made Pete almost laugh at the grumpy expression on his face. Pete wiggled closer, allowing Patrick to grunt and poke until they were situated face to face, with a few inches between them. Once upon a time, there wouldn't have been that space, but Pete forced himself to tamp down the disappointment and let things stay at whatever pace Patrick was comfortable with. When it was happening, I believed it, you know, Patrick confided. It's not like there were two me's. I wasn't being forced to say or do those things while secretly knowing it was right. I believed it. It's okay, Pete said softly. Shut up, Patrick snapped. What I'm trying to say is that I remember all of that. The shit I said, the way I felt, everything I did to you, to Joe and Andy. And I know that it's not real. None of what I saw, but it's going to take a while to shake it. Maybe a long while, Pete said. Patrick gave him a look, and Pete fell silent again. At least Patrick was somewhat back to normal then. Pete had never thought he'd miss that pissy glare. Yeah, Patrick said finally. Maybe a long while. Pete just nodded, wondering how things were going to change. Maybe he shouldn't go back with Patrick and the others. Maybe he should set up a safe house of his own. Patrick might want a vampire-free space. Oh, God. Joe! How was he going to tell Patrick about Joe? Something happened that you need to know about, he began, searching for the words. I already know about Joe, Patrick said darkly. Ryan and Spencer aren't as discreet as they think they are. Joe will get his ass kicked for it, the stupid fuck. I am not worth that. You kind of are, Pete said softly. Patrick hit him, the blow nowhere near as strong as normal. He was exhausted. You did a lot to try to fix this, Patrick said. I remember that too. Thank you. You're welcome. Two hours later, they were back at the airport, filing out of their cars, eyes on the plane that would take them back home. Patrick was moving slowly, tiredly after his ordeal, leaning heavily on Andy. When he stumbled a little, Ryan and Spencer darted forward, hovering in case they could be of help. Brendan came up beside Pete, looking a little worse for the wear after Amanda had worked him over. His eyes were trained on Ryan. So, it looks like you've won, Pete said. It's not about winning, Brendan replied. But yes, I did. Pete turned away in disgust. Don't worry about Ryan. Worry about Joe. He's the one who doesn't actually want this, Brendan said, his voice laced with irritation at the thought of being judged. Pete turned to look at Joe, who stood awkwardly next to Briar some distance away. Another car had approached, and Pete could see Schechter sitting in the back, waiting for a moment before he got out. When he did, Pete tensed, worried that Joe was about to get caught in the middle. As it turned out, the two vampires just stared at each other before Schechter pulled Briar forward into a hug. He said something too low to hear, and then looked pointedly at Joe before getting back into the car. Briar wasted no time in turning his attention to the human he'd claimed from Gerard, saying something gruffly before Joe took a step backward and then another.
When it was clear that Briar wasn't going to follow him, he turned and ran, not stopping until he made it onto the plain, just behind Patrick and the others. Briar watched him disappear inside, and then got into the car himself.
"Well," Brendan said, "isn't that special?"
He hurried to the plane, too, leaving Pete to wonder at Schechter's sudden change of heart and Briar's newfound forgiveness. No doubt it had something to do with the part he'd played in bringing an end to such a long scheme, even if the method of his participation had caused such an uproar. Pete pushed the thought away and continued onto the plane, the last one on. The flight was uneventful. Ryan and Spencer slept the entire way, leaning together, Brendan watching creepily from across the aisle. Patrick was passed out on Andy's shoulder, across from Joe, who kept looking over every other minute. He hadn't wanted to discuss just what had happened with Briar on the tarmac, only saying that a choice had been involved, and Joe had been significantly less desirable than staying a member of Schechter's little family. For most of the flight, Pete was left to his own thoughts. It made him happy enough. He used the time to plan exactly what he'd do once they landed. The possibilities were endless. It was easy to slip away from the others when they were all so exhausted. Pete didn't take his time in making his way to punk territory, finding a semi-secluded spot to wait. It wasn't long before he caught the one he wanted unawares, following a boy down an alley, giggling and playing with her hair. She looked like any other kid her age. Cute. Harmless. The guy wouldn't know what hit him. Pete dropped down from a fire escape, and the boy screamed like a 6-year-old in pigtails. He turned and ran when he saw Pete's fangs, leaving without even a backwards glance at the woman he was abandoning.
"Isn't that chivalrous?" Pete remarked.
He took in the girl's angry eyes and smiled.
"An empty stomach is the least of your worries right now," he said. "Did you expect to see me so soon?"
"Days ago, actually," Haley replied. "You're slow. What's wrong? Didn't care enough?"
"You're trying to bait me,"
Pete said, moving a little closer in case she tried to run. "Leaving Ryan, putting those stars in such an obvious place.
You've been doing it since this thing began. Why?"
"Use your head," Haley said. "It's really not that difficult to figure out."
"You only leave a trail if you want to be caught," Pete said. "But why use Ryan?"
He paused, looking more closely at her. If you changed her hair, smoothed it out, pulled it back and made it less orange. If you put her in a pretty flowing dress.
"Do you get it now?" she asked. "You're the girl he tried to save," Pete realized.
"He only made it worse," she spat. "Him and you and Patrick? That turned it into a sport. Did you even realize you'd missed one of them? He followed me home. He killed my parents and did this to me. Oh, but that wasn't enough, was it? I'm stuck with them now. They say they're my real family."
"So you used his image from that night and left a trail back? You do know there are easier ways to kill yourself, don't you?"
Pete asked. "Don't be stupid," Haley said scornfully. "This isn't assisted suicide. It's me covering my ass. I knew I didn't have the experience needed to guarantee success, so I left a little something behind. Almost as a show of good faith."
"Good faith,"
Pete said incredulously.
You fucking tore his mind apart.
Yes, Haley continued. But the plan wasn't mine. I just wanted to leave. I was already halfway across town. No one would have ever seen me again. I had nothing to do with the gangs, or the fighting, or this fucked up little family. I was so close, too. Almost there.
Her voice took on a faraway quality, as though she were lost in thought. She snapped back the moment Pete shifted his weight, suddenly reminded of the fact that she wasn't alone, and Pete was hardly an ally.
That's when he decided to meddle in shit that didn't concern him, Haley said. I wasn't interested in your boy, but I learned early on that you don't say no to a man in a suit. Not when he threatens to rat you out.
Haley shrugged, a graceful movement of her shoulders that made her leather jacket scrape against the wall.
I wouldn't have touched a hair on Patrick's head. Blame the dandy. It's all his fault.
His fault. Pete had a sinking feeling, but he had to ask anyway.
Whose?
You'll just have to figure that out on your own. Haley smiled. But I will tell you this. He just couldn't stop smiling at the way Patrick ran off that night. Just like an overgrown child, he said. A perfect match for you.
Overgrown child.
The words echoed in Pete's mind. He'd heard that before. It didn't take him more than a moment to place it.
Of course, maybe you're the same way. Maybe that's the real reason Patrick stomped away like an overgrown child.
Of course. Things had never been easy for him before, so Pete didn't know why he'd suddenly thought they'd go right this time. He wanted to scream, to break things and hurt people and not stop until his hands were bloody. But really, what would that possibly do? He didn't stand a chance, not with brute force. He was young, and while he wasn't weak, that fight would be over inside of 5 minutes. Another way, then. He thought of Gabriel and Schechter, of the way things had gone down with Amanda. Logic, then. Barring that, perhaps a trade. The thought made Pete sick to his stomach. But if even Gabriel could swallow his pride and work within the confines of their hierarchy, then he could too. Pete would have to come up with a way to deal with him. But first, he had something to do here.
I won't kill you, Pete said.
Really? Haley asked suspiciously.
No,
Pete replied.
Like you said, this wasn't your fault. Even I can see you were forced into it.
He smiled, but he could see from her reaction that the expression was anything but reassuring.
There's just one problem, though, he continued. Your gang isn't made up of very tolerant people, and they don't take kindly to deserters. I think they'd be awfully interested in just how a dandy was able to get you in his debt.
They'll take days to finish it, she whispered.
Then I guess you'd better run, Pete suggested. Hey, looks like you got what you wanted after all.
God damn you, Haley cursed. Pete just smiled. In that moment, he could definitely see what had appealed to Amanda in drawing it out. He wouldn't get to do it himself, but someone would. And that was almost good enough. He looked pointedly at his watch and waited for her to turn and run. It was easy to sneak around the hotel where the dandies were currently staying.
Pete followed the humans around, used their service elevator, and stole a housekeeping card to let himself into the room above the one he wanted. He went to the balcony, dropped the one below, and let himself in through the sliding glass doors. A cat nosed at his feet as he stood in the sitting room, eventually deciding that she wanted up. Pete balanced her on his shoulder as he sat in a high-backed chair, turning it to face the door. He amused himself with the small, fuzzy animal until he heard approaching footsteps.
"You've grown balls, I'll give you that,"
Butcher said as he stood in the doorway. He slowly came into the room and let the door fall closed behind him.
"There was a time when you would have scrambled away from me, and now here you are, breaking into my rooms. How adult of you, Peter. Or is it just that you can't hide behind Beckett anymore, so you have no choice but to actually step up?"
"I should have realized that you were involved," Pete said. "But you don't have that particular talent. I never pegged the dandies for subcontracting."
Butcher shrugged.
"The opportunity was too perfect to pass up," he said. "That stupid girl was actually trying to leave her gang. I can't blame her for not wanting to be with them, but anything is better than being a loner. She thought she could find someone to help her, hide her until she could set up a place of her own. She's very young and stupid."
"So you, what, offered not to tell her gang if she helped you?" Pete asked.
"Something like that,"
Butcher replied.
"Knowing you, you probably got word to the others, wherever they are, and warned them away from her. Am I right?"
Butcher only smiled, not saying a word to either confirm or deny.
"She left a trail, you know. It was really easy to follow. She wanted you to fail."
"Well, now, that's unfortunate."
The butcher's smile slowly disappeared, no longer amused. Pete wondered if the woman had more to fear from him than from all the punks combined.
"Why are you here?"
Butcher asked after a moment, during which Pete was willing to bet that he'd already started planning his revenge.
"I figure this makes us even, you and I," Pete said.
There was no point in pretending that they were evenly matched, that Pete would be able to do more than maybe wound the butcher before reinforcements came. It would always be unbalanced between the two of them, Butcher's age and experience giving him the upper hand every time. Pete had to rely on logic, or, at the very least, had to appeal to his sense of fair play.
What little of it there was. "Oh?"
the butcher was saying, when Pete broke out of his thoughts.
"I almost killed Siska," Pete said. "And I did it with a smile."
The butcher scowled, so Pete continued quickly.
"You almost got Patrick, and you left a scar as surely as I did. Or even on that account. There's no need to look back, so we might as well move forward."
"Are you afraid of me?"
the butcher asked sweetly.
"I'm a practical man," Pete replied honestly. "And I can understand an eye for an eye. He just didn't have to like it."
"I can maybe concede on this one issue," Butcher said. "But anything else is fair game."
"Obviously," Pete said.
He hadn't expected anything less.
He hadn't really wanted it either.
"Then, until next time," Butcher said,
clearly dismissing Pete now that he'd grown tired of the conversation. Pete stood, turning toward the balcony, taking a half step before the butcher's voice drew him back.
"But kindly leave Siska's cat, or something might happen to that god-awful dog you've been feeding."
Pete just looked at him.
"You might leave here thinking you won,
but understand something, Wentz,
Butcher explained.
Whatever you do to me and mine from here on out, it will come back to bite you and your friends in the ass. Every time. We might have overlooked things while Beckett was here, but our patience, John's patience, isn't endless. Keep pushing, and we will actively start hunting you down. Keep that in mind. Like Pete didn't already know this. Now, seriously, it's time to go.
Butcher was staring out the window, watching the sky as it grew a shade lighter.
Unless you want to sleep in the dirt, we're all booked up for the day.
Pete set the cat down and backed away, not willing to give Butcher his back. Maybe he was right. Maybe it was time to take a step back from the dandies. It didn't mean giving up. There were still other things to focus on. For now, at least. The end.
Well, I drug your ghost across the country, and we blotted out my death in every city. Memories we whisper, here's where you rest. I was determined in Chicago, but I dug my teeth into my knees, and I settled for a telephone, sang into your machine. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. And I kissed a girl with a broken jaw that her father gave to her. She had eyes bright enough to burn me there, reminding me of yours. And in a story told, she was a little girl in a red roof sunbreeze field, and there were rows of ripe tomatoes where a secret was concealed. And it rose like thunder, clapped under our hands, and stretched for centuries to a diary entries. Just with hands stretched towards the calendar, hanging itself. But I will not weep those dying days, for all the ones you've left. There's a few that stayed.